He scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left!
Off the glass, in left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yale, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, welcome to the Scotiabank Saddledome. Welcome to the Hot Stove Lounge. Vickers' volume's a little hot, a little hotter. And we get you going this hour on Flames Talk. It is Thursday, April 3rd, and we're underway on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. And live right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. The text line open for you this hour at 960-960. We'll consult that plenty as we roll on. Hello, Vicks. How we doing?
Oh, we're doing so much better now, pal. You scared me.
That sometimes it comes in a little hot.
It does. I can confirm.
Yeah, exactly. Here we are. Final eight games of the regular season, Vicks. The situation pretty set in stone as the Flames get set to host the Anaheim Ducks on Thursday night. Flames need to make up 8 points on either the Blues or the Wild in their final eight games of the season. They have 16 points on the table. Their elimination number with Minnesota's overtime loss to the New York Rangers on Wednesday night, the elimination number is 4.5 games or 9 points. That means any amount of points gained by Minnesota or St. Louis and lost by Calgary combining to nine or equaling nine will officially eliminate the Flames. You may say to yourself, well, hold on a second, why 8 points? They're only seven back. The situation is this: the Flames need to make up five regulation wins on the St. Louis Blues in their final eight games. Impossible? No. Likely? No. So I'm just going by the assumption that the Blues and the Wild will win the tiebreak. Minnesota's got 33 regulation wins. That's your first tiebreaker. St. Louis has 30, and Calgary has 26. So, yes, they're only seven back, but they actually won't be able to tie them. They'll have to pass one of St. Louis or Minnesota, which means making up 8 points in the final eight games of the regular season. And on the outside, we're saying, Vicks, not much margin for error. And that is very true, and it definitely felt like, I don't know, and maybe this is just me, but it felt like there was a bit of a realization inside the room that that's where they're at too. Like, for the first time, it felt on Thursday morning getting set for the Ducks game that they understand the situation, or they're vocally, they're being honest vocally about the situation, which I wasn't necessarily expecting because, you know, all year it's been that, hey, we believe that we're here and we believe that we're in the fight and we believe we're going to make the playoffs, all those types of things. And so then to hear, and I'm not even saying this is a bad thing.
Right.
It definitely struck me on Thursday morning. Like, for instance, here was Jonathan Huberdeau talking about the situation for the Flames.
You look at the standing, but I think it's the belief. We got to get that belief in us, and we do. And I think, like I said, it's now it's like becoming, we do or die kind of game. I think we have to win every game. So I think just go out there, take one game at a time, but obviously we got to come out with the 2 points.
And Blake Coleman, very similar when he spoke about that on Thursday morning too.
It's one day at a time. I think, in my opinion, we still got a good chance if we put ourselves in that situation. You know, you got to go 7-1, 6-2 at worst. So, we just go one game at a time, one day at a time, put our best foot forward and see where the cards fall.
And it's the first time all year, Vicks, that I haven't heard them talking about, being in it or haven't talked about or haven't heard them talked about how confident they are that they're going to make it or whatever the case may be. Like you heard, hey, we got to go 7-1, we got to go 6-2, Jonathan Huberdeau, do or die, we got to win every game from here on out. And when you start hearing those things, maybe it just kind of sunk home to me that, okay, yeah, this really is a significant uphill climb that the Flames have in front of them. Maybe I'm making more out of it than I should, but it did strike me a little different in there on Thursday morning ahead of the eighth to last game of the regular season.
Well, the first thing that strikes me is you appreciate the honesty. Not that they're deceitful beforehand or anything like that, but I think you can start talking the way that Blake Coleman and Jonathan Huberdeau do when you don't control your own destiny anymore. The Calgary Flames can't just win out and automatically gain a playoff spot. They've only got two games in hand on each of the Minnesota Wild and St. Louis Blues. That's 4 points. They cash those in, they're still behind those two teams. So you do need some help on the out-of-town scoreboard in order to execute this thing, which is sneak into the playoffs. And they players know that it's long odds, and they know that they need that help. And for them to vocalize that, yeah, we either need to win out or go 7-1 or go 6-2, you appreciate the honesty and the awareness of the situation. They're not turning a blind eye to what those other two teams can do and need to do for in order for them to clinch. They need some help. They need one of those two teams to falter. St. Louis Blues just happened to be on a 10-game winning streak, so you don't necessarily point to them, or at least I don't. But the fact of the matter remains is they do not control their own fate. They are not in control of their own destiny. Yes, they can sort of be in control of the 8 games remaining on their end. And yes, they do have a head-to-head with Minnesota, but I digress. St. Louis and Minnesota also control their own fates. If they just take care of what they need to control, it's irrelevant if the Flames go on an 8-game winning streak or not.
Yeah, and I guess they can do the math too inside that room. Like they're not dumb. They know the situation. We're talking about
if they can do the math.
Exactly. We're talking about a bunch of full-on adults in that room. They know the score. They know the situation. And maybe facing that situation head on and acknowledging the situation like they were inside the room, maybe that ups the urgency level a little bit. Maybe that cranks the urgency level up a little bit and allows them to, you know, find their game again or find the type of desperation they need to be able to have a chance at putting together a run in their last 8 games. It's been difficult for them to get on any type of run here over the last 3 or 4 months. Like essentially since they went on their run to start the season, going on another one, you know, they've had a couple of win streaks. So their longest one since has been a 4-game win streak somewhat recently as they came back from that road trip and won the game against Seattle. They won the 3 in a row on the road. Then the 4th straight was the Seattle game before they lost to Dallas last Thursday. But generally, Vix, like this has been a team that has found it difficult to really string together positive results. And on the other side, part of the reason why they haven't fallen completely out of this is because, you know, it hasn't been that they've been able to avoid and prevent like those
catastrophic fatal
really, really long losing or winless skids or whatever the case may be. So they definitely need to avoid that in the final 8. But, you know, one of those things they got to keep going, but the other one they got to fix. They are going to have to get on some sort of run. They know it. They were frustrated about the way the Utah game went on Tuesday. They lose that game 3-1, and now they've got an Anaheim Ducks team and a team that has been very difficult for a lot of teams to play here down the stretch. They got 8 games remaining. They've got some winnable ones of those 8, but they're going to have to take care of a lot of their own business here if they're going to want to keep themselves right in this mix until the very end.
Yeah, and they've managed to loiter around a little bit. They're 15th in the NHL in points percentage at .579 since that Four Nations break. Fortunately, the Wild are 22nd at 475. We won't even get into the Blues and their .850 points percentage since, because it's absolutely ridiculous. 2 regulation losses.
Are they the best team?
Oh, yeah.
Since?
They are very much the best team in the NHL since the Four Nations break. So I kind of look at it as, I mean, anything can happen in this sport. St. Louis Blues could go on a 6-game winning streak. You typically don't follow a 10-game heater with a 6-game skid. So you look to Minnesota, who's at 89 points, as we've mentioned. They play at a 500 points pace in their final 6. That gives them 6 of a possible 12 points. That puts them at 95. Flames, again, would need to get to 96 because they're not going to hold the tiebreakers. 82 with 8 games remaining, that's 14 points. That's exactly the 6-2-0 or the 7-1-0 that Blake Coleman's talking about that they need to play at in order to do that. That's if Minnesota plays at 500. Again, they've played a little bit under that. So even if they're at 2-4-0 over their final 6, and Calgary, again, has a head-to-head, so you can inflict some damage there. Calgary either needs to get to 94, 95, 96, pending Minnesota / St. Louis. It's long math, but it's good to hear coming out of that room that they're well aware of what kind of run they need to go on.
Yeah, and you probably don't think about a too big picture. Like they are
one bite
focused
at a time.
On one, and it's the most cliche saying in the entire sport rather, but I mean, at this stage, with the ground they have to make up, all they can do is one game at a time, and they do not control their own destiny. In fact, they a lot of their destiny is now in the hands of Minnesota and St. Louis. Each of those teams have six games to go, and the Flames have eight games remaining this season. And the games in hand matter, but they don't matter. Like, at this point, it's about... Does
they
Minnesota,
have to be 2 points each.
Yeah, and does Minnesota drive this home the way they need to? Does St. Louis drive this home the way they need to? If the answer to either of those questions are no, then the door remains open a crack for the Flames, and then they also have to get themselves on a pretty significant run here. So here's the latest playoff odds. Over at Money Puck and Hockey Reference. Money Puck, both the same order, just slightly different percentages, but both Money Puck and Hockey Reference have St. Louis, Minnesota, Calgary, Vancouver in that order. St. Louis, 94.6% at Money Puck, 94.3% at Hockey Reference. Minnesota, 92.6% playoff odds at Money Puck, 93.2% at Hockey Reference. Both of them have Calgary just over 10%. 10.3% at Money Puck, 10.7% at Hockey Reference, and then Vancouver almost officially out by their metrics. Canucks, after their just 5-0 shellacking in Seattle. And that's a game they needed, and they not only did they not get it, they got crushed. 1.9% for Vancouver at Money Puck, 1.0% over at Hockey Reference. So, you know, the odds heavily favoring St. Louis and Minnesota. Both of them have them both up over 92%.
Yeah, those, from a Calgary perspective, you have a 1-in-10 shot, basically, of finding a way to sneak into the playoffs, whether that's a Blues falter down the stretch or a Wild falter down the stretch. But again, let's be honest, we're through 74 games. If your paycheck doesn't say Calgary Flames on it, chances are you weren't expecting them in September to be in a spot where we're talking about them having a 10% shot at qualifying for the postseason. There has been no shortage of doubt, self-doubt in that room, from that coaching staff, from that management, and for that, you've got to tip your caps. And I mean, they started out the season building belief. They've flirted around 500 ever since that best season start in franchise history through six games. Six games, was it?
Yeah, 5-0-1.
They haven't faltered. They haven't folded. They haven't looked, and something went the wrong way, and they've said, poor me, and this is the end of this push. There's a lot of belief in that roof and room, and for that, I give them a ton of credit because they've got way more belief than pretty much everybody from the outside of that room, and they've lived it through almost 6 months now, and all you can do at this point is tip your cap and wish them the best of luck
now,
because they're not supposed to be here according to everybody else.
How confident are we that belief continues on in the final 24 periods of the season? Because honestly, my confidence remains pretty high that their belief level isn't going to change. Their buy-in level and their investment level isn't going to change. So I'm not expecting the Flames to kind of put their tails between their legs and quietly have this season come to an end. I'm expecting them to fight right until the final whistle. And they may be eliminated before their final game of the regular season. We'll see, but I don't see Blake Coleman or Nazem Kadri or Mackenzie Weegar or Matt Coronato or Dustin Wolf or any of these guys all of a sudden, you know, gearing down just because they're eight back and gearing down just because their playoff odds are a whole lot longer than they were, say, a week or 2 weeks ago. I think that we're talking about a team that, even if they do get officially eliminated, is going to go full out right till the end, because that's the identity they've built this year. And they're 90% of the way through. 90% of the way through, why get away from your identity now? You might as well finish the regular season knowing that you played all 82 games the way that and with the approach that you really kind of prided yourself on all year long. And I think whether they make it or not, and I know others will disagree with this, but I think whether they make it or not, if that is what we see between now and April 17th, whether they're have an X beside their name or an E beside their name, I think you can come away feeling pretty proud inside that locker room of what you got done.
Let's pretend that it's Thursday, April 3rd, and Aaron Vickers isn't sitting across the table from you. He's a member of the Calgary Flames, and there's a 10% chance of Calgary qualifying for the playoffs. I'm in that room, and I'm going 10%. no, we have no chance whatsoever. If I even, like, body language that, what do you think Nazem Kadri, Blake Coleman, and Mackenzie Weegar would do to me? Like, that's
probably
the
body you.
Yeah, exactly. That's the belief system that they have in the room from the leadership group where, hey, until the math doesn't math, you best be out there giving it 110%, if we want to add another cliche, 110%, because that's how that leadership group is wired. That's how guys that have won the Stanley Cup in the past are wired. So I couldn't imagine even showing any sort of negative body language, never mind even saying, hey, 10% is too much to overcome. That doubt will not creep into those walls from my perspective.
Text line's open at 960-960. Let's get to it on this Thursday edition of Flames Talk. It's Steinberg and Vickers along with you from the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. Mike says, too bad they didn't pick up more points with all of their overtime and shootout losses. Yes, and sometimes having a bunch of OT shootout losses can help you get into the playoffs. Again, I think back to Montreal in 2021 when they had 11 or 12 in a 56-game season, whatever it was. And that allowed them to make the playoffs over Calgary. But this year, the fact that they, A, haven't been able to win most of their games or a lot of their games in regulation, just 26 of their 35 wins have come in 60 minutes, and the fact that they have dropped a decent amount of their games that have gone. Let me do the quick math, because that's what Steinberg's so good at. So they've got 9 plus 12. That's 21 of their 74 games have gone past regulation this year. And 12 of them they've lost in. 21 out of 74? That one I can't do without.
Roughly 33%, I'm going to call it right now.
Let's see. 21 divided by 74, 28.4%.
Oh, wow. I was that far off, 5%
5% off.
That's significant.
A little less than 30% of their games this year have gotten to extra time. So that's hurt them in the regulation wins category. And because they have not been able to win all a good chunk of their games, more than half of their games that have gone to extra time, they've lost in. They're 9-12. So this year they've won 35 games and they've lost 39 games. If you want to look at it that way, you know, even a few more in overtime, and this is a little bit of a different story. That's a very fair point by Mike there.
Well, I don't think it's any coincidence. You look at Minnesota and St. Louis, they each have 7 loser points, if you will. The three teams chasing down either of those, Calgary, Vancouver, Utah, and Utah is a stretch, I know, but I'm going to toss them in. Calgary, 12. Vancouver, 13. Utah, 12. So it's not as if the Flames are exclusive on this. If Vancouver managed to pull it off or Utah managed to pull off a few extra bonus points, different conversation. But yeah, it stresses the need for a game breaker to develop within the organization that helps you snag as many of those bonus points as possible.
This person says St. Louis can't keep this up. They're going to have to go on a losing streak starting next game. I mean, they have won 10 in a row. I don't think there's anything that says they have to.
They have 2 regulation losses in their last 20 games.
So why are they all of a sudden going to just slow down now? Look, and do I think they're going to win 16 in a row to finish the year? Probably not. Do I think that they're going to win 10 in a row and then lose 6? Probably not either. They've put themselves in a spot where they can drive this home themselves. They've got Pittsburgh on Thursday night. So, yeah. Do I think St. Louis will finish 16-0 to finish the year? No, probably not, but they've put themselves in a spot where they fully control their own destiny.
Yeah, can you imagine they win 16 in a row to close out the regular season and then win 16 straight in the playoffs, go 32
just the
straight?
32
why not?
Streak,
why right? not?
This says, excuse my pessimism, but it really seems like a waste of a season. Crazy to think the Sabres have more playoff series win than the Flames do since the lockout. Sabres haven't made the playoffs in 14 years. It's quite shocking. Can't rebuild or they'll end up like the Sabres. Well, great. That would be an improvement. This from Dale. Good grief, you two. It's over with. You two should be saying if they don't win another game from here on out, they might have a chance at 23rd place. I don't usually think a program called Flames Talk that hypes you up for Flames games and talks about the one team is going to suggest, you know what, yeah, let's just talk about, because everybody wants to tune in for a team that loses their last 8 games. That's typically not what we're going to do, hype up a bunch of losses.
Well, and I don't think we're glossing over the fact that it's a 10% chance. Like, we're talking about playing clips where Huberto says they need to win out and Coleman says they need to go 7-1. Like, everybody here understands the scenario, which needs to happen in order for the Flames to qualify. And that's not even counting having one of Minnesota or St. Louis falter down the stretch as well to give the Flames an opportunity to climb in.
Ashley writes, listen, I've seen the Flames go up and down, but the fact they haven't give up and they have a shot and still have a chance proves that it's always possible. That comes from Ashley. Wedley, the ever optimist, don't dream it's over. They'll get in. Ryan in Calgary, does this St. Louis team resemble anything from the team in 2018 that won the Cup? I mean, the way Binnington's playing, yes, the way some of their top players are playing.
Coaching change,
yes.
Mid-season.
The coaching change from Montgomery. It was Berube in 2018. It's Montgomery this year. Jim Montgomery's put himself in the conversation to be coach of the year, or at the very least be a finalist by what they've done. This reads, I've watched this team turtle for the extra point for 3 years. Keep your foot on the gas for 60, not 55. This says the Avalanche have the same amount of regulation losses as the Flames, but the big difference in the standings is the overtime losses, like the previous texter mentioned. Absolutely. And this says it's done, homers. And, I mean, I think we have made a pretty good case for just how uphill a climb this is and how improbable it would be for the Flames to make the playoffs. I think that's fair to say. I mean, when you're talking about a 1 in 10 chance that most sites are giving you right now, then, yeah, it's a pretty improbable thing for them to do it. But that doesn't mean that they should be looking at it that way. Like, we can talk about how uphill a climb it is. We can talk about how long the odds are. You can talk about that. The hockey world can talk about that. And we're just talking realistically how difficult this is going to be. But inside that room, as you said, you can't sit down and start waving any white flags or say, boys, you know what, it's been a good year, 74 games, but yeah, I got nothing left in me. We're not going to make it anyway. Like, of course they're not going to do that, and nor should they. That would be a complete slap in the face to what they've accomplished through 74 games. It would be a complete slap in the face and disrespect what they have built this year and the identity and the new culture. And those are all buzzwords, I get it, but in this case, I think they're true. They have built a new identity. They have built a new culture, and you know, to expect them to just, you know, wave the white flag or you know, slink into the night with their tail between their legs just because they got to make up 8 points on a team here, that just isn't what this group has built this year.
And I guess if it'll appease the texter, if the Calgary Flames go 5-3 in their 8 games down the stretch, that's above 500, that's playing roughly around the 554 points percentage they've played all season long, they're not getting in.
Adam says, people do want that talk. They need some validation that lots have been asking for them to tank so they don't end up in this spot. They want to have a voice and have that voice heard on the radio. I mean, sure, but like, probably not going to hear on Flames Talk the two guys hosting the program talking about, yeah, they should lose.
I mean, again, it's a 10% chance. It's a 1 in 10 chance that they pull this off. Like, we've stressed that significantly, I feel like. Like, it's not great odds. We're not sitting here going, that's only 10%, but I give them a 90% shot that they're going to qualify.
This from Alex, who says, math teacher here, if they win their 2 games in hand, that pulls them to within 3 points in Minnesota, win their head-to-head, and they're 1 point back. No. Technically, yes, that is true, although it's not as linear as that, and Minnesota still controls the bus, right? Like, if they win their other 5 games and lose that game to Calgary, it doesn't matter, right? So, yes, in one sense, that's true. In another sense, Minnesota still holds all the cards. Dale in Drumheller says, had to hop on this one since I'm the glass half full. Dale, stay positive until they lose 2 games, then they can get worried. 1 game at a time. The Flames are due to open the scoring a bit more often, and if they can do that, their work ethic will carry them to wins. Adam in Calgary says, I love how not taking a totally pessimistic view makes you homers. Some of these texters need to download the Jiffy app to get someone to come fix their brains. This says from Spencer in Temple, why can't Calgary start their own 8-game win streak? That's what they would love to do. This says, I'm excited to see a few more young players play in the last few games here, and that is something to look forward to if they end up missing. That's just a little bit on the text line at 960-960. Speaking of which, it's Steinberg and Vickers on this Thursday edition of Flames Talk, Daily Flames Roundtable in just a few minutes this hour. There were some, I don't know how many, but there were some that I saw on social media that when you tweeted out the lines, projected lines for this game against Anaheim Thursday night. Like, how they just sign a guy, they're not going to put him into the lineup? And I knew it was coming, and yet I was like...
You didn't know it was coming?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
But also, I was like, really? Like... They just signed Adar Suniev. They're fighting for their playoff lives. He arrived at like 10:30 on Wednesday night, has not practiced with the team, did not morning skate with them because his gear isn't here. He was never going to play in this game. Like, I know that there is this, in some sectors of this group of fans, there is a want to jump on things and make them negative right away. And I get it because of how frustrating this organization has been with results over the last 20 years. I understand it, but like, this is not an example of Ryan Huska being a bad coach or Craig Conroy being a bad general manager or anything in between because Suniev's not playing tonight. Suniev was never going to play in this game. And if you were listening to Flames Talk on Wednesday, I think it needs to be reiterated, he's probably not going to play until it's either a fait accompli, they're going to be eliminated, or they've been officially eliminated. Like, similar to Matt Coronato, this mirrors Coronato from 2 years ago. Flames were on the outside looking in, trying to see if they could make the playoffs, and they didn't get eliminated until game 81 of that season, and Matt Coronato played in game 82. Well, if the Flames, and they don't want this to be the case, they would rather not be eliminated. And if they make the playoffs, that's awesome. But if they do get eliminated, then yeah, you're probably, well, not probably. If they get eliminated, you will see Suniev and you will see two or three other players that you're not used to seeing.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I was a little surprised at that Discord. Again, he has never practiced with the team, has not participated in a morning skate. He didn't participate in a training camp in September. The coaches have never been with him on the ice. He has no understandings of the systems versus what they're playing in UMass. And his gear's not here.
Give him some loner gear.
I can do that math.
Okay.
Give him Backlund skates.
Well, he should be in over Sharangovich. Really? Like, I know that a few other college guys, like Ryan Leonard, jumped into Washington's lineup, and Perreault jumped into New York's lineup, but... It's a little bit of a different story talking about a guy coming off of his sophomore season. And Ryan Leonard was also pretty high-end player.
So was Gabe Perreault, too.
Gabe Perreault as well, right? Leonard had a 30-goal, 49-point season and is, like, physically ready to jump in. Suniev, I still think, needs to put on a little bit more weight and a little bit more strength. I don't know. It doesn't seem like a realistic situation that, you know, they're just going to pop him in, especially his first full day in Calgary. Oh, you're playing, you're making your NHL debut. It just never was never a realistic thing.
No. And again, going back to the, you should play over player X or player Y. Like, come on, guys. Come on. Who are we kidding here?
A few more texts. Dustin says, how's Team Tank been going for the Sabres? Winning culture is important. This read says, I can't really come to terms with these Team Tank personalities. This from Bill, who says, I want the Flames to continue winning, if only to make the Montreal pick worse. Also hoping for New Jersey to never win again. This says from Andy in Lethbridge, cheering for Jersey's pick to be higher than Montreal's pick. And there you go. And this on Suniev. Hi. I think he's going to have to watch a few games anyways. He'll see the intensity for the playoff push. It'll be really good for him. I think once they're officially out, you probably see him get a few games in. Yeah, he hasn't even practiced with the team yet. It won't be until they're out would be, and again, not it doesn't have to be mathematic, but I think once we know, have a pretty good idea one way, it, not one way or the other, because if they make it, it won't be until the very end. But if we do, and honestly, hopefully we don't, but if we do end up having, you know, a situation where three or four games remaining, it's pretty clear that this is not going to be a playoff year, that's maybe when we see a guy like Suniev get into the lineup. And just before we transition to the Daily Flames Roundtable, I do want to make sure we congratulate acknowledge a big win on Wednesday night.
Calgary bench is standing. They know what's about to happen. Leading 6-2. Draw down, and this game is over. Yabba Dabba Doo, the Hitmen heading to round two of the WHL playoffs after a four-game sweep of the Saskatoon Blades.
Oh, an old classic from Brad Curl, Yabba Dabba Doo, Hitmen off to round two. He's been rolling that one out for like two decades. Good to hear it back because for the first time since 2019, it's been 6 years. Worldwide pandemic didn't help, but it's been 6 years since the Flames, since the Hitmen rather, have advanced to round two of the Western Hockey League playoffs. If all things go according to plan or the way that it's looking, the Hitmen are set for a second round best of seven showdown with the Lethbridge Hurricanes. Lethbridge has a 3-1 series lead in their best of seven, and they reseed based on points. So the Hitmen will be the number two seed likely, unless Medicine Hat gets completely blown out of the water. They're up 3-1 on Swift Current, and they're probably going to win their series. But assuming Medicine Hat, the best team in the East, gets through as well, Medicine Hat will be the one seed. Calgary will be the two seed going into the second round of the playoffs. So congrats to the Calgary Hitmen. Awesome to see them off to round two for the first time since 2019. And we'll find out in the coming days who they play in round number two. It is Steinberg and Vickers along with you this hour of Flames Talk, coming at you from our Hot Stove Lounge broadcast studio here at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. It's Shan and Taylor producing, and they're back in the Groundworks downtown studio. Groundworks, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
And your Thursday edition of Flames Talk continues with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg, and now the Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest-growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why minutes from the Calgary Airport. We welcome in Derek Wills now as well here in the Hot Stove Lounge to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. Gents, we know there's eight games to go. There's 16 points on the table. And the Flames have an uphill playoff climb in front of them. But for the time being, they still have everything to play for. And for the time being, they still have meaningful games to get up for. And they'd like to make eight meaningful games between now and the end of the regular season. So as they start off this final 10th of the regular season, guys, give me one player you've got your eye on in this final stretch and why you've got your eye on that guy.
Really torn between a few players, but I think I'll go with Dustin Wolf. Just kidding. I do love stealing Vickers' answers, though. So
I just like that you're here in person. So, like, hey, Wilsey, which direction do you think you're going so I can pivot? Oh, no, you'll leave Dustin Wolf for me. Oh, Dustin Wolf. Yeah, thanks a lot, pal.
Staring at you to see your reaction. But, no, I'm going to go with Martin Pospisil. The three guys I was torn between were the two former Flyers in Morgan Frost and Joel Farabee, who I think have been really snake-bitten. But I'm going to go with Martin Pospisil because I actually think he's playing really well right now. And Ryan Huska talked about him this morning. I know the goals haven't been there. He's goalless in 17 games going back to February 25th, but the hits have been there. Equaled his career high with 9 hits in that 3-2 shutout victory over the Avalanche on Monday. Had 3 more in that 3-1 loss to the Utah Hockey Club on Tuesday. He's 5th in the NHL with 279 hits this season and is a guy who I think is really impacting games by playing playoff-style hockey late in the regular season. And the Flames have talked about playing playoff hockey since they came back from the Four Nations break. So the fact that this guy has started to play that style and has really found himself again. Remember, he got off to a really strong start this season. Then he started taking bad penalties at bad times. I would say he probably cost the Flames a couple of games earlier in the season by doing that, by taking bad penalties in the third period of a close game. And then he looked tentative for a little while. Like he didn't know where that fine line was between playing the way that makes him impactful and not taking bad penalties at bad times that cost his team points. So now that he's found himself again, I think he's been really good playing on the right side of Nazem Kadri, and we've seen some different guys play on the left side of that first line. But, you know, he's a guy who I think can offer more offensively. We saw that last season. We saw it early this season. And if he continues to play the right way, I've got to believe that the goals and the points will come. And once he gets a goal or a point, maybe the confidence comes with that. and we start to see more of that. And maybe tonight's the night, fellas, because Martin Pospisil does have 5 points in 5 career games against the Ducks.
You'll never guess where I'm going, Willsy. I'm going Dustin Wolf. I'm going a guy that's not even guaranteed to play all 8. I'm going Dustin Wolf because at this time in the stretch and what the Calgary Flames need to accomplish over the course of the next 2.5 weeks, you need your best players to be your best players. And by and large, Dustin Wolf has been the MVP of this team all season long. And to me, honestly, guys, I don't think he's necessarily playing his best hockey of the season. Since the Four Nations break in 13 starts, he's 5-5-3 with a 2.73 goals against and a .901 save percentage. By comparison, Vladar's at 2.14 and a .918. But you need your best players to show up in a time like this, in a situation like this. And we've seen Dustin Wolf absolutely dominate in crunch time at lower levels, whether it's the Western Hockey League, whether it's the American Hockey League. And not to put too much pressure on a rookie goalie who is pushing to be a finalist or potentially win the Calder Trophy, there are bigger things at stake. That's the playoffs for the Flames. I look to him to see what he does when it becomes crunch time here.
Mine might be a little off the board, but I when I wrote this question down, I had it with this player in mind. I think there's a big stretch for Jake Bean, guys. I actually quite like Jake's game, pretty much because he was kind of in and out of the lineup in the first few weeks, months of the season. But sometime in November, he and Braden Pahal kind of found a real groove as this team's third pairing. And I thought that that groove continued nicely into December, into January, and leading into the Four Nations break. I liked where those two were as a pairing. Since the Four Nations break, it feels like Bean's game has really dropped off, and they, for a guy that only has one more year left on his contract, he's a $1.75 million cap hit for a team that, you know, is looking at and hoping to bring a player like Zane Parekh into the fold next year. They've got high hopes for the likes of Yan Kuznetsov or Ilya Solovyov. We don't know what Joel Hanley's future is going to be with this team, but for Bean, I really think we're at the point now where he needs to step his game up again at an important time of year and show them that in some high leverage games he can get the job done, because I've been really nervous when that third pairing has been out there the last little bit. Like, we've talked about Pahal and his game has dropped as well, and he's been a healthy scratch a few times after not being a healthy scratch at all for the first half and a bit of the season. So yeah, I'd like to see Jake Bean's game really return to where it was. And I don't think that we're ever going to see him develop into a top-pairing defenseman or anything like that, but he was pretty reliable for a little while there, and you could count on him with his first pass. And, you know, just that third pair and Bean's side of the pair has just been more susceptible than you'd like it to be over the last number of weeks. So with some big decisions that this organization is going to be making when it comes to the future of their blue line over the next couple of years, this is a big stretch for Jake. I really believe that.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is fair, Pat, but I'd push back in this sense. I think that pairing fell off.
Agreed.
As a pairing.
Yep.
I don't think it was one guy or the other guy, because Braden Pahal, for me, until recently, and when I say recently, the last 3 games, didn't look like himself. He wasn't playing as physically as he did early in the season. And, you know, he was making some mistakes defensively, which we didn't see a lot of in the first 59 games. And he played in every single one of those first 59 games. But he's been a healthy scratch in 6 of the last 15. So his game fell off too. And I think what made that pairing effective was that you had 2 players who complemented one another. So Braden Pahal is a physical, stay-at-home defensive defenseman. And that's kind of the opposite of what Jake Bean is. He's not overly physical, but he's a good puck mover, whether it's skating the puck out of the zone or making a good first pass. He's a good player in transition who moves the puck quickly. So it's like Pahal wins the battle, gets the puck to Bean, and it's out. That's when those two guys, in my opinion, are at their best. So I think it's probably a combination of both guys' games falling off to some extent, but the Flames are going to have to lean on that pairing. I think that's the best third pairing they have. You know, Daniil Miromanov's done some good things, but he's been so up and down that I think he needs some consistency down the stretch here. So hopefully Jake and Braden can get back to where they were. And you talked about the fact that they were an effective pairing for a while there, Pat. As for Dustin Wolf, that's an obvious one, Aaron. With that said, we all thought yesterday when we talked about it The Dan Vladar.
Yep.
Well, we
yep.
didn't think that Dan Vladar would get the start. We said if it was up to us, Dan Vladar would get the start against the Ducks. But Dustin Wolf is going to be this team's number one goaltender for a long time to come and certainly will be down the stretch as long as he's healthy. So the Flames are going to get to the playoffs. He's going to have to be one of their best players in the final 8 games.
Hey, even Ovi doesn't pass up the empty netters, pal.
No, that's why true. He's 2 away from tying Wayne Gretzky's record.
And the only thing I'd say about the Bean Pahal thing is that Pahal kicks in a new contract next year, and Bean's only got 1 year left on his. Now, Pahal's only a 2-year deal, so it's really only a 1-year offset. But you know, you wonder, like, is if it doesn't improve, like, is Bean guaranteed on this team next year with 1 year left on his deal and a pretty, you know, pretty reasonable cap hit at 1.75? That's the only difference I see between those two guys. But you're right, the pairing was really good for a couple of months and hasn't been.
Yeah.
At that level over the last little while, and that's not just on Jake.
I mean, there's no cap crunch here, so I would be really surprised if Jake Bean wasn't playing for his hometown team next season. But, the Flames need contributions from everybody down the stretch to stay in this thing, so that third pairing is going to be important.
Daily Flames Roundtable. It's Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg on this Thursday. Guys, are we all on the same page? Like, I know this might upset some. But like, unless there are extraordinary circumstances like injuries or whatever the case may be, they're not putting Idar Suniev in the lineup unless they've been essentially eliminated. Is that probably, are we all on the same page there?
With a tongue-in-cheek apology to Team Tank, yes. We are definitely on the same page there. Listen, this team has fought hard to stay in the playoff race. And the truth is, if the Blues hadn't gone on this heater, this 10-game winning streak, Flames might be in a playoff spot right now. It's not like they've fallen off the map. They've played some pretty good hockey, and you know, even in some of the games they've lost lately, like last Thursday's game against the Stars, they were by far the better of the two teams in that game, and they should have won, probably going away, and they somehow lost 5-2. And then in Saturday's game against the Oilers, they had 1-0 and 2-1 leads, and I don't think they were even close to being as good in that game as they were in Thursday's game against the Stars, but you still had 2-1 goal leads, and you had one late in the third period and wound up getting 1 point instead of 2 and losing in overtime. So, you know, the Flames have played some good games that they haven't picked up as many points in as they probably deserve to. It's more about the Blues for me than it is about the Flames, but, you know, this team deserves to continue to fight for a playoff spot, and they deserve for the coaches and the managers to put the best team on the ice possible. And with all due respect to Idar Suniev, he's an exciting prospect for this team. I hope I don't see him this season, and that's not a knock on him. Pat, you talked to him earlier today, and he seems like a great kid. He's really well spoken for a young fellow who's first language is Russian and not English, and you know, he's got good size and good skill. I'm excited about him as a prospect, but I'm hoping this playoff race goes right down to April 17th, and if it does, I'd be really surprised if we saw him. Now, as we talked about yesterday, Zane Parekh could be a different story. We just talked about Jake Bean. We just talked about Braden Pahal and the third pairing. It wouldn't surprise me if the Flames were still in the fight for a playoff spot and Parekh's season came to an end if we saw him in some NHL games, because you know, he's the type of talent that could be an immediate difference maker for a team that could use some more goals, and he's certainly scored a lot of those and set a lot of them up as well.
Yeah, like you said, Willsy, this is no disrespect to Suniev, pardon me. This isn't a prospect showcase situation yet for the Calgary Flames, and I don't really like the discourse of, well, he can't be worse than player X or player Y. Like, we're talking about a kid that has never played a pro game. We're not talking about a blue-chip prospect the likes of Ryan Leonard or Gabe Perreault, who I see as the comparables. Well, how can Washington or New York throw their guys in right away and the Flames can't here? Just for some comparison's sake, these are the signings out of UMass over the course of the last couple of weeks. Junior forward Cole O'Hara signs with Nashville. He was a fourth rounder in 2023, so somewhat comparable in terms of the draft stock invested. He led UMass in scoring with 51 points. Suniev had 38. O'Hara's signed. He's on an ATO in the AHL. His center, Danzlok Melis, signs in Boston. He's in the AHL on an ATO. He was Suniev center, as I mentioned, for the final 12 games of the season. Had 33 points. A couple senior forwards. One signs with Tampa in the AHL on an ATO. The other one's just on a pure ATO in San Diego. So expecting your new shiny toy to come in and make an immediate, you know, impact on a lineup on a team that's pushing for a Stanley Cup playoff spot, no matter how long the odds are, 10%. We understand Team Tank. It's down to 10%. But expecting a guy to come in, and even talking specifically on Thursday, no practice, no morning skate, no training camp, no time with coaches, no systems, no equipment. Like, the expectation shouldn't be that this guy goes into the lineup right away. It should be a situation where, okay, we're going to have a realistic look at our chances, whether it's mathematically eliminated or just the mountain becomes too high. That's when you start auditioning prospects. That's when you start getting them into the lineup so they have a game or two, so they know what to expect come next September.
And look, like, if in his first four or five practices, every single practice, you as a member of the coaching staff come away and say, whoa, that guy was so good again. Like, if he's so good in four or five practice sessions that you got to get him in and you're still playing meaningful games, I guess. But I don't really see that being realistic for a guy who is coming out of his sophomore year in college and still, I think, needs to add a little size to that frame and strength to his game. And I think he fully should get into games if this team is out of it. And who knows if when that might be. But as of right now, I mean, and I do try to look at things quite pragmatically when trying to have these conversations. And yeah, I recognize it's a very long shot for the Flames to make the playoffs, but it's still a shot. And I think you'd be, I don't know, I just think that you'd be doing a disservice inside that locker room
100%.
To just be, you know, making those types of changes now. Again, different play. Like, Cale Makar was a different story. And Zane Parekh, I still don't think is ready yet either. And who knows when his season's even going to be over. But, like, Cale Makar, well, that one was obvious. Cale Makar was a superstar in waiting when he came out of UMass, that was 6 years ago now. And, yeah, that was a no-brainer. And but with no disrespect.
A fourth overall pick.
And also a fourth overall pick. This is a little bit different in Suniev's case. And I think, you know, much like they didn't put Coronado in the lineup 2 years ago when he signed until they were officially eliminated and he played game 82 there, I kind of think that's the way this will go with Suniev. And honestly, I don't have a problem with that because he's here to soak it in. He's here to practice with the team. He's here so that the strength and conditioning guys can get their hands on him and you know, start him on the right process. The development guys can be here around him all the time, and they can get him with a plan, as best a plan as possible, to be able to come back in 4 or 5 months' time in September, and, you know, he can be potentially ready to compete for a spot then in his first full year of pro hockey. But I just don't think you need to be forcing him in on April 3rd.
Yeah, and Pat, I will disagree. Even if he looks like the best player on the ice at 4 or 5 practices, and I'm not sure the Flames have 4 or 5 practices left this season, that would not be enough for me to insert him in the lineup if they were still fighting for a playoff spot.
Yeah, probably not me either.
Because look at Sam Hanzek. He was arguably their best player in the preseason and one of the best players in the preseason period. And the regular season started, and he looked like a completely different guy. So I just think it would be tough for the Flames to insert Suniev at this stage of the game unless they were basically mathematically eliminated. Parekh could be a little bit different story, and I made this comparison on the morning show today. I don't think it's fair to even compare Zane Parekh to Cale Makar. Both blue-chip prospects, but you know, Parekh's much younger and much less experienced.
And has only played against 20-year-olds at
most. Right, and you watch that goal that he scored in overtime the other night, as beautiful as that was, I'm not sure he's scoring a goal like that in the American Hockey League, let alone the National Hockey League. Teams just, they're better. So we'll see. Again, let's hope this conversation is a moot point, because if we see certainly Suniev and probably either one of those guys down the stretch, that probably means the Flames have fallen out of the playoff race. And selfishly, I hope that doesn't happen.
Well, and at the same time, too, it's not like Suniev's oblivious to the situation that he's in, too. So he's not getting here going, hey, why am I not playing game one? Why am I not playing game two?
It's very clear to Suniev. All of this to him as well.
And guys, and airdropping him into, like, the fastest-paced situation in the regular season in the NHL, after coming out of the NCAA? Like, yes, only a select few can do it.
And I still think this is a really important time for him as a prospect.
Yep.
This is an opportunity that not all guys get as they prepare to turn professional. Best case scenario, Aaron, you talked about it. Send him to the American Hockey League, but they can't do that.
They can't.
So now the next best scenario is for him to spend some time around the National Hockey League team and to just figure out what it takes on a day-to-day basis to play at the top level in the world. So this is an important time for him as a prospect, and I think it will make him more comfortable when he comes back for training camp and the preseason. You'll get to know the guys, get to know the facility, and I think that just makes him more comfortable going into the offseason and to start next season.
Well, and Flames Talk fan member Wes Gilbertson asked him earlier Thursday morning, it's like, what's the school situation like? And so it's online courses. Yeah, that's true. But you're also here to learn from the Calgary Flames. Yeah. Like, that's what this is all about, is getting yourself ready for next training camp.
He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. That is your Daily Flames Roundtable. It's brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest-growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why. Minutes from the Calgary Airport.